The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Okay, ready to draw next episode's dumb idea.
From the box of mystery!
It's pretty mysterious. Also, I managed to completely miss any of the cards on that first scoop.
It just adds to the mystery.
As do the air holes and the moist stains.
Okay, I have only one card?
Yes.
Alright. Interesting. The Spin Doctors.
Ooh. Ah, I remember this one.
Alright.
I don't know whether you want backgrounding for it or whether you just want...
May as well. It's my handwriting, which always concerns me when I find something in my handwriting that I don't remember writing. So,
especially confessions.
Bear in mind, it may not have been your idea because you were copying it off the list from...
Oh, good point.
Message board.
I think that may have been an idea of mine.
Do we want the background, or do we just want to see if people yibber off in different directions with it?
And then we can. I like the yibbering. Should we go with the yibbering?
Let's go with yibbering.
All right, so, let's see what we come up with.
In a week.
See you next time.
Some days later.
Welcome to the Big Red Couch. We are Tonya.
Kev.
Craig.
Ben.
And last time we drew a card that said, The Spin Doctors. You will probably have just heard me say that.
I'm assuming it was a musical reference.
I did kind of have that damn song stuck in my head since the 90s.
Oh, good. Not just me.
There's a song?
Okay. Well,
you are dead to me.
There was a band called the Spin Doctors who had, I think, one hit wonder.
Two princes?
Two princes, yes.
Whoosh. Oh, those guys!
Yes.
Let the record state that he made the whoosh overhead motion.
And so noted.
Okay.
And that brutally impaired my ability to take this one seriously for a very long time.
Do we take
anything seriously?
Yeah. I think taking it this seriously is actually against the rules.
Okay, fair enough.
I think this concept is technically my fault. And by technically, I mean it's my fault. And the idea that... Do we do the talky thing now?
May as well. We're recording an episode, so it seems childish not to. Otherwise, what people are going to hear is like 30-odd minutes of us just
asking whether we've asking whether we've started yet.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Listening to the neighbours drive up and down the driveway.
I see.
Trying to entice the neighbour's cat to come in and actually talk to us as opposed to hunt for cobwebs and spiders and then leave.
I swear he thinks that we're some kind of game console. So he gets to the front doorstep, he scratches the mat, which is cat equivalent of dropping a quarter, comes in through the door, and then we change from being the outdoor monkeys that will pet him and ruffle his belly and allow him to bite us to being impediments to him getting his high score for the level.
Mm. He does wiggle if you pick him up, and the idea that he's complaining that we're ruining his Katamari score is enticingly hilarious. The idea that the Spin Doctors was associated with for me was some kind of superhero setting where you have a crew of people whose job it is to unfuck other superheroes causing public disasters of some form.
Okay, so you've got a city where there are superheroes, and these are a crew of people who position the terrible public damage as a good thing.
Or just rearrange it. You might get a phone call to say that the Superman equivalent Captain Wonder or something has gone on a rum bender downtown and is currently naked and getting into fist fights with walls because they're looking at him funny.
He's knocked down. Evil twin!
Well, yeah, exactly. Okay, we've gone with the traditional evil twin riff. When we need you guys to get there, put the buildings back, contain him before he does anything in front of TV cameras, create an evil twin analog who can be publicly defeated by, you know, we're rousing some of our agents now, and that being the campaign of just trying to create a positive public comprehension of superheroes being humans, by which I mean disorganized, panicky decks.
Okay.
So, not as tasteless and mean-spirited as the boys in cases, but...
You could play up, you know, a corporate angle of... Mm. The boys, if you wanted, that these were corporate employed things, or this could be a government branch. You want to retain a positive association in the public mind, considering that the administration sometimes makes use of these people, and you don't want this to come up at election time or something, so it gets managed. It's just that in this case, management isn't just about PR, it's about PR mixed with reducing, eliminating, and undoing collateral damage, as well as these things.
So, probably a comedy game?
Comedy game, yeah. Gonna have, I don't know, if I was doing pre-gens, a super who does good illusions, a super with the ability to reduce entropy in something, so basically you take a building that's been punched to bits and, hey, it's back again! Do-do-do. Very much pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. You can do all sorts of things with it, but very much comedy supers.
Also, it'd be a group of superheroes that don't want to be superheroes. Or there is a reason that they aren't the limelight guys.
Yes.
They're the reason
they're
the
PR guys.
They're the ones with the dustbusters and the brooms.
Yes.
Well, that's something I was wondering, because when Kev was talking about it, I was imagining it as the sort of group of faceless bureaucrats, but then the notion of them actually being supers makes me wonder whether possibly these are people who are employed by the various superheroes themselves.
Ooh.
On the grounds that they really don't want anybody in authority. City government noticing that they're doing a huge amount of damage is fine, but if a national government got hold of the fact that they're doing all this property damage, they might look askance, and so they've found, I guess, the non-flashy superhero. So you've got the people who wear tights and capes, and you've got the people who have that kind of personality. And then you've got other people
who look at those guys and say, whoa, thrill issues much, I'll be over here with the Dustbusters.
Yeah, the plumbers of the apocalypse type, as it were, who are just, they're these people, they have superhero abilities, they're not particularly interested in going out there and battling Doctor Doom and saving the world, but for a nice, steady paycheck, they're perfectly happy to, okay, yep, all right, so Captain Fantastic's gone on a bender again. Or what's he done? Really? Okay, fine. I guess we can put the Sears Tower back together. How complicated can that be? Where did he put it? Why France? Never mind, don't tell me. Okay.
Yeah, he took a leak against a building and cut down the Seattle Space Needle.
Nice.
I'm going to work on that.
Cool.
I seem to remember a version of this where the supers in question were working for a mall?
Oh, yeah!
Or was that something else?
That was a slightly different thing, but that's Benjamin Bao. I'm probably mispronouncing his name, and that is Bailey Wolf, who did Monsters and Other Childish Things and Cobra's Club and all sorts of other cool stuff. He ran a game where people were employed by a giant mall as the superpowered PR and security people and things. And I remember that there was a circumstance where you have a big soulless corporate marketing event where the children are being shown, you know, the lovable giant purple dinosaur mascot. Something goes wrong and turns into a giant actual purple dinosaur and goes on a rampage. And you have to not just contain it, but it never happened really kind of thing. It was
also, it's a bad thing to eviscerate Barney in front of a bunch of school kids.
It's a bad thing also for kids to be eviscerated by Barney when there's people with webcams and cell phone cameras. So
dinosaurs eat like a duck.
Or like a cat, there's something caught in their teeth.
I imagine them flipping children into the air and kind of catching them. Shake. So who's next?
Apparently it's me, from the fact that everybody was staring creepily at me.
What we do.
To various degrees of success in some cases. Well, after an initial diversion into how do I not make this about a certain band from the 90s? Was it the
I think it's the 90s, yeah.
Yeah. Note how vast amounts of research.
Pocket Full of Kryptonite was the...
Oh, yeah.
Was the album. I don't remember anything else about it.
Pocket Full of Kryptonite, Two Princes.
Mm-hmm.
Pocket Full of Kryptonite might have been a song as well? Or...
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, after
Zero.
That. So very, very old.
On with the show.
Oh, yeah. I went with a time travel riff.
Yeah.
There's lots of time travel stories along the lines of, okay, so we go and kill Hitler, or we change who won World War II, or the US Civil War, or War of Independence in one fairly good case. And most of the ones I've read have always been about sort of direct action, which got me thinking about, what if direct action
just
was kind of the thing, yeah, not an option, or kind of the thing that had been shown to be too little too late. That the point at which you go back and kill Chancellor Hitler, it's probably already too late. The various forces that are causing World War II to happen are already in motion. So in order to stop the event, you need to go earlier. You need to influence societies, and you need to change things. And so the idea of, effectively, a time-traveling PR sort of social influence team who are just trying to tweak things just enough to make the future come out the way they want it to. So you could go back and try to stop John Wilkes Booth, but that might get noticed. But what if you went back and tried to set up the situation where Booth never wanted to assassinate anyone in the first place?
Then that particular group would have found another patsy, but...
Yeah, but if you go far enough back to make the situation not happen.
Okay.
Naturally, this being an RPG, it's not going to work the way anybody intends.
So were you thinking a Spirit of the Century
I want to say emotional battle map, but that's not what I mean.
Social?
Social, that's what I meant.
I seem to remember Kevin telling me about the some systems in, is it RAIN, for managing countries and empires and that sort of thing. Yeah, this one would definitely not work as a convention game.
Mm.
You know, this one sort of strikes me as a bit of a longer term thing. But the notion of people trying to do very subtle influences on history to change things just enough to have their desired outcome.
The company rules for RAIN would be a good way of doing it. I think with the kind of detail you might want for it, the social conflict maps from Diaspora might be an even better fit. Because then, you know, it's not just how well you do something, it's do you do it subtly.
Do the social conflict maps give you latitude for unexpected outcomes?
Yes!
Okay!
I think so.
I mean,
well, bear in mind the players aren't the only actors upon the maps, and
I think the example in the Diaspora book was a year-long campaign to try to change hearts and minds in a particular solar system to get involved in a war and stop being isolationist.
Mm-hmm. How long would that take among players?
I cannot remember.
So you don't actually know if you're spending a little bit of time each session for a while, or...
I cannot remember. The example was focused entirely on this, so it's going to be hard to tell.
Yeah.
At least I haven't read it recently. But the unexpected outcome was that by the end of the time period, I think that they had pretty much defeated the opposition, and yet had not achieved outcome. So it's kind of a, you know, now what? Or they were no longer being opposed, but just hadn't managed to get that kind of momentum socially. But I may be terribly misremembering the example.
It brings to mind a game I heard of where the players had a time travel job where they had to go back in time and make impossible things happen. So if you've heard a story of one day in 17-something, a man has a chat with his groom, walks around the back of his carriage and totally disappears, then it's the player's job to disappear him. Without ever being seen.
One of the things that it kind of reminds me of from a different and far less benevolent angle is that there's a plot line in the webcomic Fans from T. Campbell where you wind up with this series of timeline battles because you have someone from the very far future where war has basically been won by her and she gets told, hey, congratulations, you've made yourself out of a job, and she decides to get a time machine, break into alternate parallel universes,
and start again.
Conquer that timeline. Conquer history, then use the resources of that timeline, you know, starting at the weakest one, use the resources of that timeline to besiege the next timeline up so that she will never run out of worlds to conquer.
Dude.
Yeah. And so you are confronted with this of someone who is a tactical genius on a large number of levels who's not just defeating your timeline, she's rearranging your timeline to be easier to defeat as she defeats it. And that was the concept. It was really well done.
Interesting. So I suspect run as a game, the time traveling spin doctor thing would be periods of figuring out, okay, what do we need to achieve? Followed by probably the meat of the actual gaming being, okay, how do we go about achieving it? You know, if there is a particular battle that needs to be won, rather than introducing better weaponry, how do we make the commanders on one side better commanders? Or alternatively, how do we make the commanders on the other side worse?
See, that I think is easier to do.
Yeah. I think the benefit of subtlety is that it's interesting and it's really been done. The benefit of RPGs is that it's easier for us to come up with dumb ideas involving direct action. And I think if we were building it as a game, it might be worth using something like the Unreal Engine with its random generators and things of, okay, you've done direct action. What unexpected things have you done? Whoops! And clatter and says, okay, you went back and did something specific. Now, the world is run by psychic weasels.
I have seen a comment somewhere, possibly on RPGNet, see if I can track it down, that any sort of time travel invariably ends with Hitler winning World War II. You go back, you stop the Lincoln assassination, Hitler wins World War II. Interfere with the War of Independence, Hitler wins World War II. Go back to the 60s and shoot a random hippie, Hitler wins World War II. Travel to the far distant future, Hitler wins World War II.
In terms of another story that played around with this a little bit, there's, I think it's 1802 from Neil Gaiman, if people have read that one, the whole idea that certain specific iconic comic book heroes wind up appearing in Elizabethan Europe.
1602.
That's like an
8-issue... Yeah. The fact I said Elizabethan Europe and thought 1802 suggests I'm not very awake, but yeah. Yeah. Good comics, anyway.
Hmm.
So, tell us of your marvellous idea, Ben.
What, the one I came up with maybe 2 hours ago? I'm still not sure about.
The fun part is kicking these things around. So.
Yeah. My idea is kind of adjacent to the two ones that have come up, slightly. I think it's just off the corner of both of them, to a degree. What I was thinking about was pitching the players a part of a group who manipulate reality by manipulating people's perceptions. The idea that they are literally PR and marketing people
mm-hmm.
in a setting where if you do it well enough, it changes the world. You change reality, yeah. And it vaguely stems off some of the Indigo Prime stuff that I remember from 2000 AD, but was more direct reality shifting stuff than Dead Gay Psychic Cowboys. But the people, they were more managing multiple realities and sending specific people in to fix broken bits. So, again, you get the idea that you're travelling to different places, but I had the feeling that these would always be a little bit more Faustian in nature. They approach an individual and say, you've got a problem. We can fix that for you. Here's how we can change things. And they would get something out of it.
Okay.
I'm not sure where the conflict would be, apart from attacking the task you've been given.
Okay. So you have clients coming to you and saying, these are my issues, I want everyone to believe that blue is the new black, or...
I'm thinking that they go looking for jobs to do. When I say Faustian, it's pretty much, poof, they turn up in the corner of the room, standing in front of a door that was never there, and go, hey...
Okay.
What you doing? And it
so
would...
it's a little bit Faustian, a little bit to a nose paperclip. Hey, I see you're trying to take over the world. We can help you with that.
A little bit. So you think your flying car design is just great if you could just get it off the ground. How much do you want to get it off the ground?
Yep. So yeah, it could be, effectively it's a heist game, except you're heisting reality.
Okay.
How deeply that might affect the players, as it were. It may be something like a Nominee or the White Wolf Angels and Devils game, which I forgot the name of. They may actually be outside of reality.
They're
doing this for shits and giggles, or for some other higher cause. But the idea of giving them absolutely gonzo powers, contingent on changing the world around them first, it could be quite interesting.
Sounds a little bit like Nobilis meets Leverage meets Unknown Armies, maybe.
Yeah, something a little bit like that.
So it has its gonzo elements, but is also kind of dark and freaky.
And finding antagonists for the group would be interesting. It'd be presumably rival PR firms. And I realise this is largely sprung out of reading Bill Hicks's biography. There's this little thing about asking the audience whether there's any PR or marketing people there. And then they just ask them to kill themselves.
Ooh.
This isn't a joke. I just make the world a better place. Just suck a tailpipe. So yeah, maybe it's a little bit mean-spirited, maybe not a game for everybody, but yeah.
It's odd, because Bill Hicks never came across as that much of a mean-spirited person.
Wait,
oh no, wait,
I think you're
the
thinking
other
of somebody
thing.
Else. Yeah. I think you may be thinking of Pee-wee Herman.
I try not to think of Pee-wee Herman.
Fair enough.
Yeah, cool.
And then Pee-wee Herman and Bill Hicks had a kid, and they called him Henry Rollins.
What?
I don't know. There's some kind of pattern there in my head, but damn if I can explain it even to myself.
Just maybe I should put a budgie mask on and you can go to sleep. There you go.
That's actually a cushion, but we'll accept it.
We'd like to point out to our audience that it is unfeasibly warm today and no one's really with it.
So this is probably going to come out as a really short show once I've clipped all the long silences.
And yeah, and the bits of people going...
Groans of pain.
Why is it so hot? I'm sticking to myself.
I think we could usefully cut most of what I've contributed, so that would be fair.
If you could do talking to a cushion, maybe.
Okay.
What is Tonya's idea?
Tonya's idea was come up with a couple of days ago. Woo! So let's see if I can read my handwriting. I was thinking more along the lines of kind of an improv game, something more like Fiasco.
Ooh.
So starting with an idea that we're all very familiar with now, a PR firm who works for superheroes. I wasn't thinking that the players would be superheroes themselves initially, but that's growing on me as we've been kicking it around. But basically have the game start and the game clock start with... your client superhero staggers through the door and says, I have no idea what I did last night, but there's this dead hooker. I need you to save my career. And then each player will fix a thing, but also create a problem for the next player.
You can use a really dark, weird version of Pilgrims of the Flying Temple for this.
I was just thinking that. Wow.
It wouldn't necessarily have to be there's this dead hooker. I have no idea where my pants are and my phone says I've been drunk dialing the anchor for the 9 o'clock news.
or anything along those lines. So you have the time for the fiasco clock between you to save your client's career as best you can. And I was thinking there'd be kind of a middle ground of, okay, you can't save his career, but you can save his image, so early retirement is also an option for...
It becomes the sort of superhero who just can't do it anymore and goes and starts a training academy or something.
Which
now makes you wonder what the horrifying scandal that Dr. Charles Xavier was involved in all those years ago that nobody knows about.
Yes, I've never played Fiasco, so I may have the mechanics of the game wrong.
No, I think you're very much on the right track. I think Fiasco may be usefully sought out if one of us goes to Gen Con, and one of us is. So there may be more of a shopping
list. Why are you looking at me like that?
In which we make squeak, squeak, squeak noises at the...
So I should pick up a copy of Fiasco then.
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll totally do that thing.
It sounds like the sort of thing that would work well as a pickup game.
Yeah.
Particularly if nobody can be bothered GMing.
That is my understanding.
It's slightly more challenging than Doe.
Yeah.
Because Doe is lovely for an afternoon of telling stories to each other.
And whimsy. Oh, I'm kind of liking the idea of the slightly darker and horrifying and to a certain extent van candy version of Doe. With dear PR firm of the Flying Temple, I have woken up in my hotel room, and there are a couple of dead hookers. The mirror is smashed, and there's a bunch of white stuff on it. And also, there's this weird object in the corner that's glowing occasionally and speaking to me in Latin. Please help.
I dare you to write that down for a Doe session now.
Yeah, you have to now.
We kind of have to do a live play as well.
Okay, we can pull it from the record here, since we have a permanent record. Will be haunting me for some time now that I replay that conversation. Okay, I will write down that letter if people will play through it with me.
Okay.
We can use the Christmas letter as a palate cleanser.
Because we'll need it.
Interestingly enough, one of the stretch goals that has been unlocked for the Fate Call Kickstarter is a sequel to Pilgrims of the Flying Temple.
Really?
Yeah.
How would that work?
Basically, advance the timeline, use the Fate Call system, and basically have it as the Flying Temple has been lost.
Oh!
And you've got people wandering around doing the best they can, but without that kind of infrastructure and things. So it's more of a grown-up game. A little bit of a darker setting, but that's still kind of, we want to make these worlds better.
Okay.
I may be misremembering details. Plus,
there's people who would have been pilgrims had they...
Yeah.
Had there been such a place as the temple to send them to.
Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, details on that are available from the Fate Core Kickstarter page, which you can find by searching for Fate Core Kickstarter.
The chances that the Kickstarter's still running by the time this airs are slim to non-existent, but the item itself will still exist.
Yeah, and the page will still be there in terms of information about it.
Yeah. So, we have all put forward something. I don't know. Of the four ideas that we've put forward, which one would you want to play most?
Yours.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, I can definitely see it being one that we could pick up and run with most easily.
Yeah, mine would take
so much research!
A bunch of setup and a bunch of research.
Plus system monkeying.
I did know someone who ran the sort of game which would be perfect for this, in that he had a required reading list before you were allowed to play.
OMG.
Gorn.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense now.
Yeah.
There's a quote
I suppose Tribe 8 has a required reading list of 50 whole pages.
I think it's about 110, but yeah.
I read 50 whole pages before I gave up.
I read the whole thing because it was awesome.
When are you running again?
Not, because I've got too many other things to run. I did see a quote online. I'm going to blame RPGNet for this, although it may not be fair. That suggests that some people have this problem as well. It was just the quote of, players who are willing to read setting material are like romantic partners who bring home young nubiles for bedroom fun. Technically they exist, they're rare, and trying to force the issue of turning the people who you game with, or are married to, or are going out with, into one of these people, if they're not naturally inclined, is only going to end badly for everybody.
A distressingly accurate, if kind of creepy, analogy.
It's the internet. Useful but creepy is the best we can hope for.
Yeah, I'd say Tonya's one, as you say, definitely has the, and we start, and
we
hit the table running, as it were.
Mm-hmm. See, I was really interested in Ben's idea, just from the point of view of, I don't think I've ever been in a game where I've been playing the antagonist and known I was the antagonist.
I would be sorely tempted to play a cat-like thing with long ears, and at that point, that's probably bad.
I'm not sure I get the reference.
White cat, pink eyes.
Oh!
We were just talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
For the record, I am sitting here looking at the three other people with an expression of confusion on my face.
We'll show you a couple of episodes of, I think it's Puella Magica Madoka, something like that?
Yeah, something. There's an extra word. I've got them in the wrong order,
something like that. Anyway, there's...
Puella Meiji Madoka Magica or something. It's rearrangeable.
Madoka appears to be the commonality there.
Yeah, that's the name of the lead character. And one day a creature comes to her and says, you can help us stop the heat death of the universe by becoming a magical changing girl, and you get a wish. And the creature in question is the creepiest fucking thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, it basically takes typical tropes of magical changing girl anime and then dials up the fucked upness without changing the tropes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your mileage may vary, but I personally found myself getting to the end of almost every episode and thinking, that's not right.
Having seen it as a show, it's pretty much impossible to go back and watch Nanoha without freaking the hell out, because that is a happy fuzzy show where that trope is played straight and everything is assumed to be...
accurate.
Nice and accurate, and the little fuzzy thing that's offering you phenomenal cosmic power isn't evil. Spoilers.
No,
I hate the thing on sight. I've seen one episode and I was thinking...
I've seen the whole thing and I'm still not entirely sure.
Yeah.
There have been various threads that I've seen online with somebody doing a Where I Watch of Madoka as a show. And just, it's amazing the number of times that you hit episode one. What is that thing? Kill it with fire!
I think it's the... Oh, the architecture in that show, just from the first episode, is amazing.
Oh,
sorry,
yeah.
just gonna throw that out there.
Beautiful show.
But they've clearly tweaked the cat-rabbit mutant... fucker. Just enough to make...
Alien fuzzy thing.
Yeah, the arachnid reflex comes out.
I think it's the fact that it doesn't blink.
That doesn't help. It's not unusual for anime.
Straight out of the camera. Straight at you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't blink. And it doesn't waver.
Okay.
Anyway, so apart from that huge off-topic ramble...
That's not like us.
It's what we do.
I think Kevin's idea could slot into a regular superhero game, even as like a rest stop for it, depending on how much you want to subvert the game you are currently playing in.
It's a modular thing. I mean, with something structured like the Kerberos Club, where you have a loose organization to which people belong, having a section where you get tapped because a member of the organization has done something unwise, and this needs to be managed before it can be leveraged by enemies of said organization.
Mind you, I also kind of like the idea that they are employed by the big teams. So you've got the cleanup crew for the Famous Four.
Yeah.
Or Fantastic Four. You've got cleanup crew for...
Oh, that would be a tremendous dick move to have
X-Men.
In the setting. We are the cleanup crew for the Fantastic Four. Thus, we blame the Justice League for all sorts of shit that was our fault.
Except the PR crew for the Justice League
has tried to have us murdered.
Just thinking about the superhero spin doctors cleaning up the mess thing, to a certain extent it's a way of having a supers game without having a lot of the added tropes of the superhero genre. So you don't have the secret identity, you don't have the I must protect the family at all costs, you don't have that double life thing, because what you've got is...
people with powers to do a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're, to a certain extent, a construction and a very rapid construction and reorganization crew. And then they just
you are just a working
go staff. Home to their lives. It's potentially a nice setup for those people who have superpowers and aren't really interested in all of the baggage that goes along with them.
And they could have Nemesai, as it were, but they would be courageous Captain Custard, who they look after, but they have to clean the stench of decaying Custard out of his various scenes of heroic victory, and therefore they hate him.
I mean, if we imagine this as something like the West Wing, where you've got people who, you know, theoretically, they're just workaday staffs who can go home to their lives, except this does kind of consume their lives, because they have to be aware of the news cycle at all times and that kind
of
thing.
You'd just be like a plumber, you're always on call,
yeah.
You're just, so yeah. If you get a call in the middle of dinner, it's, Custard's staying on Main Street.
Well, I was just thinking,
why is it our month for having to deal with Captain Mucilage?
I was just thinking that you have situations in shows like The West Wing where, sure, there's people on the other side of the political floor, except they're not really your nemesis. Your nemesis are the people theoretically on your side who screw up or who try to take the glory, or, yeah, so...
Hmm. Well, you could equally have nemesis in the cleanup crews for other, other teams. So,
absolutely.
Or is this a world, do you think, where the cleanup crew for the League of Evil drink at the same watering holes as the cleanup crews for...
I think it would be funnier if it happened like that or something. Yeah. You could have nemesi and things.
So it's less a case of we
walk... I need a sample of Spider Girl's venom. Oh, right, yeah. Vial 5? Yeah, okay.
Was that pre-crisis or post-crisis?
Nice.
This is becoming very meta, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it might be. It would be fun.
And how does the Marvel Civil War fit into all of this?
Ah!
Don't ask. Don't ask. Or ask Bob Chipman, because he explained most of it to me.
Oh, did it make sense?
No, not at all.
Oh. Because I read all of that with the different side comics. I got nothing. I lost it somewhere along the way, and when I turned around, the understanding was gone, man.
Fair enough.
So, I think that's us for the...
That was surprisingly productive. Given that it's an armpit day. Do we do the drawing thing, or...
Should we do the drawing?
Separate file, I think.
Separate
file. Alright, oh, should we close this one out? Alright. Thank you, listener. This has been The Big Red Couch. Bye from me.
Bye from him.
Bye from those guys.
I'm confused.
Next time on The Big Red Couch.
If I'm reading this right, it says banned. Behind the scenes.
That's all it says on there?
Yep.
Okay.
It's either banned or bond.
Bond, I think.
Bond behind the scenes.
Whose handwriting is it?
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to horde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!